Austin, Texas, to Essex, England. This is the Armchair Apex Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. I am joined once again with my co-host from across the pond, Mr. James Lingy 12 Lingfield. What's going on, man?
Not much in my world. It's the end of summer officially in 2 days, which is very bleak because it's like the end of summer in Britain is sort of like the beginning of a plague. Sort of everyone, when it gets to September, gets this very gloomy feel about themselves, like, oh god, the sun's going to start setting at 5 o'clock and we'll have to carry a coat around with us every day for the next 6 months. And it's just a bleak feeling in the country.
Wait, hold on. Let me get that straight. So September 1st is the beginning of autumn in the UK? You don't go by like the 21st?
I guess not. I mean, I'm just going off school. See, to me, summer was June, July, August, and autumn was September, October, November. I don't know. Like, I've never really, like, that's the sort of thing I was told when I was seven. Never really questioned it.
Wow. See, wait, I think it's true for everybody that autumn or fall starts on the 21st of September. I think it officially...
The 21st of September?
Yeah, it starts on the 21st. So, like, for whatever reason, the 21st is just the day that people have just, I don't know who decided this. Some guy named, you know, Robert, like 500 years ago, maybe decided. I'm not sure who decided this. Like, it was just like, yeah, I guess the 21st is going to be when we change seasons. So I wish it was the first of every month, though.
That's crazy. I mean, like, so your kids go back to school when it's still summer?
Typically, yeah. The buddy I share this house with, he is a principal at a school here. And kids came back to school 2 weeks ago.
See, that you can't go back to school during the summer, or it's not like summer vacation. That's 1-0 to Britain, I'm afraid. We're right again.
Y'all've got some things right. Every country gets some things right. There should be like a fictional country that's created somewhere where it just take the best ideas from all the countries and then you form a new country and it just is only based on the best ideas from everywhere. And it's called Nowhere Land because it doesn't exist. It's probably in the Bermuda Triangle or something like that. Drinking, like crushing Guinness in the mornings. Y'all got that right. Y'all got that right. Y'all also have, I feel like per capita, you have the biggest population of people who are actually able to crush Guinness in the mornings and then remain somewhat productive throughout the day.
Yeah, I mean, it's not pleasant, but we sort of do it out of obligation. It's sort of like...
That makes more sense.
Like South Korea has national service. We have alcoholism. You know, it's the same.
That makes more sense. I don't know when this started, but once I start drinking, if I do even drink, I don't even drink that much anymore. But like once I start, my day is pretty much over as far as any sort of productive activity. It's like Taco. I don't know if y'all have Taco Bell in the UK.
No, not at all.
Not at all? Oh, man. If you ever come to the United States, first thing, I'm just going to take you to a Taco Bell so you can experience fast food Mexican cuisine because it is a revelation. So, yeah. Hey, we got a Belgian Grand Prix to talk about.
We do.
We should just have an episode where we don't even talk about racing and people just tune in and they're like, oh, this is a cool, this, you know, a racing podcast. And then we just talk about Taco Bell and English drinking habits for the entire time. But... Belgian Grand Prix, they actually did the race this year. That's nice. They actually did it. That was such a letdown last year. Super bizarre as well. I don't think I've ever seen that in the history of the sport where it's just like, okay, we'll do qual. I'm not sure if that's happened before. Do you know if that's happened before where it's like qualifying and then nothing on the race day because they weren't able to race?
I'm sure it has. It surely in the history of F1. Was it the Argentinian Grand Prix where the like years ago that the drivers protested, they all locked themselves in a hotel room and refused to race?
Oh, that's crazy. I don't know. The only race I know of in my, you know, my history catalog, you know, mentally is very limited because I just got into the sport a few years ago, but the only one I can recall off the top is just the 2005 US Grand Prix. So I'm not sure.
That did start as well. So that made it, but Spa 2021 didn't.
Yeah. There used to be an Argentinian Grand Prix, huh? That's crazy.
Yeah, like ages ago. Like, I think it sort of predates Senna even. So you were going back to the 80s, like the mid-80s.
Man, it would be cool to have one or two more races in South America. That'd be really neat. Well, I guess we do Central America. We do South America. We kind of hit all. We don't hit Africa right now, for right now at least. No South African Grand Prix.
We'll see. Kyle Army, we're coming.
The Egyptian Grand Prix, man. Just race around the pyramids. Let's make it happen. So, yeah, man, Spa was pretty much the Max Verstappen show, huh? Just solidifying, codifying his dominance this season. I did not expect him to. I figured, especially with George Russell kind of just being like, yeah, Max is going to easily take it tomorrow. I was like, well, okay, he's probably got a little bit more of an inside track than I do. No pun intended with how this race is going to go. I'm inclined to believe him, even though it's like he's starting 15th or 14th on the grid. But the way he did it with such ease was, I think it was surprising to a lot of people. And just the way he was able to pull that off, it just felt like Ferrari should have been a little closer. It really was their race to lose, and they lost it spectacularly. What was your main impression after the race, just like of that whole win and the ease at which he did it?
Well, it's funny you say about the George Russell thing. After I saw it, I went on, I'm not a betting man, but I thought, I'm going to bet on Verstappen to win. Just got a funny feeling. And then I saw he was the favorite still. And I was really let down. I thought I'd get great odds on Verstappen, you know, winning the race.
Yeah.
I thought he'd get on the podium. I thought, you know, Checo, at least in the same car, surely he'd put up a bit of a fight.
Yeah.
He was slightly fortunate, I think, in the first lap for Alonso and Hamilton to be taken out of the contention, or Hamilton even. Bottas to be taken out of contention pretty early. And he went from, what, P14 to P7?
Yeah.
In the first lap, which not to take anything away from him, but...
P8, I believe,
Fortune did help him a little bit there. What can you say about the guy? You know, he's absolutely, utterly dominant. When he hasn't got damage, or he hasn't had some sort of safety car issue or something, I can't remember the last time he finished outside the top three.
Yeah.
He's just a machine, just an absolute joke.
He really is. I have this kind of running theory in my mind, and I don't know how well I'm able to back this up. It's an intuition thing, and I could be completely wrong, but to me, it seems like, and obviously we know that professional sports at any level, when you get to that top tier, it's really a game of confidence. And it's really at that point, whoever has the most confidence going into a race or a game or a match, a tournament, whatever you want to say, is going to have a pretty distinct advantage in terms of like how consistent their performance is at a very high level. And Max strikes me as a driver who is maybe the most one-track minded driver on the grid right now in terms of like those top teams, those top four teams, let's say, and his ability to go out there and execute weekend after weekend. My theory is that he's very one track minded. He's very focused on his goal at hand. And you see a lot of drivers, especially right now in this specific age of social media, of social causes, of things going on and off the track, the size of your persona, say, like in, for instance, a Lewis Hamilton, where he's sort of surpassed the size of the sport as far as his name and what he represents and what he stands for. And not even to get into the politics of that at all, because that's not the point of what I'm saying. What I'm saying is he doesn't have a lot of things on his plate like that. Verstappen doesn't. He is very much, I'm here to race. That is my entire life. And I'm going to achieve this goal with my team. And we're going to go do that. Not that these other drivers aren't any less focused, I would say, but it just doesn't surprise me that the top driver is also the one who is pretty much like singularly focused on this goal. I have a theory that has to play into it somehow. Because you do see some drivers falling off a little this year as far as performance goes. Lewis Hamilton, with everything that he does on and off the grid, Ricardo's, you know, how much time was he spending on his like wine project and things like that? These drivers that aren't having spectacular years, and maybe it's a coincidence, but it seems to me that the drivers that are pulling out results aren't typically the drivers that have 18 other things going on in their lives. And maybe that helps. And I'm just speculating. I'm just kind of thinking out loud with this. Fernando Alonso is also one of those guys who drives at a very high level still in his age, and he is notoriously it's just racing for him. He lives, eats, and breathes it. And I think Verstappen is very much the same way, where once he is in a cockpit, his veins are ice cold. And so I don't know, man. I just kind of wonder if that plays into it somehow. Maybe not. Like I said, I'm very much open to being wrong on that. But I don't know. It's just something I think about a lot.
No, it's true. I mean, the mentality in sports is such a big deal. I was talking to my dad, to use an English sports phrase, about Manchester United when they were managed by Sir Alex Ferguson, who was the best team in the world, managed by the best manager in the world. And they had this aura of inevitability about them. They'd be losing, they'd go a goal down, 2-0 down, but you'd sort of still expect them to win. You know, I'm sure like Michael Jordan, when his team were losing, he got the ball on the 3-throw line, you'd expect them to score. Or, right. You know, any of these real sort of greatest of all time athletes.
Yeah.
No matter whether the chips are up or down, you expect them to grind out a result. You just feel it's going to come.
Mm.
And Max now, I think I spoke to you just before the show started, is starting to develop that. He's, you know, it's silly to say he's anywhere near the greatest of all time now when he's only been in F1 for, what, 5 years, 6 years.
Mm.
But I think everything about him, all of his minerals, you know, those intangible minerals point like towards him being a GOAT in the future.
Especially boron, you know, the mineral boron. I feel like he's got a lot of that in his system. No.
Unreactive, controlled,
yeah,
consistent. Yeah, that's a good analogy.
That's good. I'm going to start using that more, minerals. That's one of the advantages of doing this podcast and being in touch with you so much is I just get to steal a lot of your phrases and then sneak them into conversations with some of my friends here. And they're just like, where did you get that? I'm like, the UK, baby. Yeah.
I'm going to start making up words.
Do it. Like,
yeah, Ocon was really clapped the bitch today. So you're like, huh? Pardon? And then you're going to use it in a sentence.
I will.
Like, what does that mean?
I will. Y'all invented English, okay? I have a right to steal the words. We've essentially done that already, so.
You're welcome, by the way.
Yeah, thank you very much. But I think he is, yeah, I mean, he's so consistent and so cold with this, so cold-blooded that there's almost not even really that much to even say. It's just, we'll see. I mean, I think he's definitely got the championship. I don't think it's a leap to be like, well, congratulations, Max Verstappen, on the 2022 WDC. I wanted to touch real quick, and I don't think we mentioned this beforehand, but that incident with Alonso and Hamilton on the first lap really caught me off guard. Which ones are they? That struck me as a mistake that you would not see Lewis Hamilton make maybe even a year ago. I don't know how you interpreted that. Just seems like something that Lewis wouldn't have tried. Just really seemed like kind of an amateur mistake. It seemed like a rookie mistake. I mean, this is the first lap. You're in a car that is arguably faster than an Alpine, and you've got 43 laps to go after this. You're not going to win the race on this lap. You know, I guess the greatest still make mistakes, and you could really just chalk it up to that.
Mm. Yeah, it was a bit of a collector's item these days, a mistake from Lewis Hamilton. Yeah, I mean, look, it's obviously his fault. He came around and said it's his fault. I don't think there's a debate around that. And I guess you could maybe argue it's first lap, cold tyres, heavy fuel. But, I mean, you can't excuse that from someone of his experience. I thought Alonso's comments were a bit unfair. And I'm sure it was a heat of the moment thing to say that he can only race in first place.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's uncharacteristically desperate is a way I'd describe it. You know, he looks really inconsolable after every race. And I think, to be fair, he's done pretty well this season.
Yeah.
He's had lots of incidents go against him. The incident with Magnussen in Spain, I think that denied him of a lot of points. A couple of safety cars didn't go his way that denied him of some points. And before then, he'd been on the podium a lot in a row. So it's not that he's had a bad season at all. But yeah, just strange, very strange from him. I think they'll come back in Zandvoort, Mercedes. The circuit doesn't suit the car. They've got no straight line speed. And Zandvoort will suit them far more. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see. And I hope for Lewis's sake, this is one, not of many.
Yeah. I think Zandvoort's definitely going to be a more adaptable track for them, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting to me is watching somebody like him go through this season, especially if you are, well, actually, I mean, if you've been a fan of his for over 10 years, 15 years, that you haven't really seen a side of, really, at least in a long time. When he was at, you know, McLaren in those final years of McLaren, and they were struggling a little bit, 2012, to bring it up that year.
Ding, 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 ding.
Actually, it might be 2013. There was a year at McLaren right before he left where they were struggling. They couldn't really get on podiums as much as they had been previously. And even in his early years at Mercedes, where, you know, where they weren't performing, you know, when he was alongside Schumacher for that year, even in those years, you didn't see what we see now, which is somebody that is on the other side of so many years of dominance in the hybrid era once that began.
Mm-hmm.
Just his struggling with this kind of not necessarily a fall from grace, but just this period of like, oh, we are not right now what we were even 365 days ago with this team. This car is not there. We are hitting some major snags, some real snags in the development of our equipment and, you know, facing these new regulations. What are we going to do about that? How are we going to face this challenge? And to me, that's exponentially more interesting to see somebody who has dominated for so long hit some roadblocks like this than perhaps his absolute dominance with those years that they were winning. Is what can a guy like that do in the face of adversity? And to be honest, I don't know if I'm particularly impressed with how he handles it a lot of times. Not to armchair quarterback it, even though this show is called Armchair Apex, but with all due respect, literally, quite literally, I mean, we're talking about, in my opinion, the greatest driver of all time. Like, Lewis Hamilton is the greatest driver of all time, and to me, it's not even that much of an argument. I mean, we're talking about somebody who is so unabashedly dominant, but once he hits these walls and he's not able to, you know, say the still we rise after every race, things like that, I kind of wonder if he was just a little spoiled for a little bit in those years, not by, you know, having been given the fastest car, but just being in that bubble of we're winning every year, there's no question. And has this been sort of a jarring season for him? And how well is he handling that is what I think about when I watch it. Not that he's completely unprofessional with it. It's just been interesting to see him in a position like this where the chips are quite literally down. How is he going to handle it?
I think he's trying his best to not let it affect him. I think the comments of we need to work on next season's car is his idea of saying this season's done for him. I mean, what if he gets P4 or P8 in the championship? I don't think it makes any difference to him. I think it'd be nice to see him win one race this season, just so that record of winning the race every season is kept up.
I don't know who wouldn't want to see that, you know, at this point.
Yeah, I think they could go quite well at Zandvoort. I think ones I'd expect to see them do quite well in Zandvoort, Suzuka, if we make it, Singapore, all could be ones for them to target. So, you know, I guess we'll see. Fingers crossed for Mercedes.
Come back to us, Lewis. You're our only hope. You're not our only hope. I just want to quote Star Wars. So let's move on to silly season and the remaining three pieces. I guess we've got Gasly, we've got Schumacher, and we've got Ricciardo. Real quick, is that thing a done deal with McLaren? Has that been confirmed? What are we doing with that right now?
The way I understand it, as someone who my whole law experience is watching Better Call Saul, that's pretty much where my law experience finishes.
Yeah.
I think from what I understand, you know, they're taking them to the court for like contract, not the contract recognition board.
Right, yeah.
I think that's basically just so Alpine can sue. I think, you can't force someone to drive for you if you don't want to. So I think Alpine just want the money to break the contract, which could be quite a lot of money. And that's where the rumors about them spending that money on breaking Pierre Gasly out of his contract have come from.
Right. Right.
And I think that move makes a lot of sense for everyone. I think, you know, Gasly another year at AlphaTauri. I think he's 27 next season. You only have a short career in F1, and he's never going to win the world championship at Alpine. And that's ultimately what every driver wants to do. So I think a move, restart, new team, as long as he can get on with Ocon, because I know they don't like each other for some reason. Hopefully they can put that behind him. But yeah, good luck to the guy.
That's weird. How much do you know about that? About Gasly and Ocon not getting along?
So little that I'm partly thinking it might not be true. But I'm sure I've heard it somewhere. I'm sure that Ocon and Gasly don't get on for some reason or another. I don't know whether it's on-track incidents from years ago or something personal. But I mean, from a commercial point of view, you know, two friendly drivers for essentially Renault.
Yeah.
Just makes so much sense, you know?
It really does. I think that's probably a rumor started by the Spanish Drivers Association, and just all the Spaniards are just wanting to create bad blood with all the Frenchmen. That's the only thing
like,
I can...
Like some sort of like 1273 war all over again.
Yeah, it's really just the rival from the Middle Ages that's come back. And, you know, the Spanish want to just reclaim their conquistador glory, really. They were embarrassed by Napoleon. Actually, I don't even know if that's true. I'm just making stuff up at this point. Don't know how, if Napoleon ever defeated the Spanish. Anyway.
Probably.
Yeah, I don't see... I think it would be neat. I don't know where else Gasly is going to go. He's definitely not going to go to Haas. I don't think he's eyeing a move to McLaren. I think that's his only move at this point. I think everybody's kind of wanted to see that happen. Like a movie where the two romantic interests, you know, they're going to get together at some point. It's like, can we just get on with it? Can you two just make out? Because we know it's going to happen. And so I think that's kind of a done deal. I don't see him going anywhere else. What I am interested in and what I wanted to talk about with you is not necessarily Rick, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But I guess the other half of that, which is Schumacher and where he goes at this point, you're saying Williams.
Mm.
We know that Latifi is not going to have a drive past this year. I guess it's either going to be him or Piastri, unless he goes to McLaren, which it looks like he's just heading to McLaren. So the free seat, Mick Schumacher to Williams, huh? That's what you think?
Yeah, I mean, he's got, I think, 6 months on his contract.
Yeah.
When Gunther was asked on the pit wall if he was going to stay, he didn't seem particularly enthusiastic. He's cutting his ties with Ferrari Driver Academy.
Mm.
So really, he can't stay at Haas. I don't think he deserves a move up the grid to Williams, to Alpine. AlphaTauri, I don't think you really want to get involved in the Red Bull Driver Academy, unless you're really confident you can make it up. So Williams is the only seat, you know?
Yeah.
And I think maybe a downgrade is probably fair for him. You know, he hasn't been great. He's been pretty comprehensively beat by Magnussen this season. So I don't think he can have any complaints.
This is an issue where we always butt heads on, and I'm fine with that, because it's nice to have a little contention on the pod. But honestly, I don't know if he deserves an upgrade thing is answerable, at least for me. The only question for Mick Schumacher is where he goes if Gasly vacates the seat. If I were Mick Schumacher, I mean, I think AlphaTauri would look pretty good. It depends on what they have in the pipeline, but I don't know. I don't think it's out of the question. I don't think Schumacher to AlphaTauri is out of the question. It just depends on what ecosystem he wants to be in next year. So is it that Williams ecosystem with Mercedes where it's an independent team? I guess, I mean, and just kind of going through it right now while I'm on the air with you, just thinking through it and talking through it. Where else do you go after AlphaTauri? Because that's kind of the junior program pipeline, and you kind of are entering into that whole ecosystem.
Yeah, I think AlphaTauri is, if you've been on the grid at a non-Red Bull team for a couple of years, you don't want to go to AlphaTauri. I mean, firstly, AlphaTauri are weaker than they've been for some time. You know, you remember when, over the past couple of seasons, the AlphaTauri, I mean, it had a win in it, but, you know, it was scoring P4s, P5s, P6s.
Yeah.
And yeah, a lot of that was Gasly being on great form. But, I mean, this season, I can't think off the top of my head of any particularly good lap or race from AlphaTauri.
Right.
And then again, you're stuck in sort of the doldrums of the Red Bull Driver Academy. They look pretty happy with Checo and Max. That's not changing for a couple of years, at least. And also from AlphaTauri's point of view, depending on who Williams get in, I think that'd be pretty much the weakest lineup on the grid of Tsunoda and Mick. You know,
potentially, definitely.
I don't think Tsunoda's bad, but you know, Yuki Tsunoda is your lead driver. Like, seriously, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. But I think if Gasly leaves, they've got Tsunoda as the lead driver regardless, because who else do you bring in?
Yeah, that's true.
Who else do you bring in at that point? I think with a Gasly departure, which it looks pretty likely at this point, which is kind of the biggest wild card of this season, is Gasly leaving, because that opens up a lot of possibilities. But with him gone, you're looking at Tsunoda in the lead seat regardless.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think the natural succession, because AlphaTauri is just Red Bull B. It's not its independent team. And you know how I feel about that.
Red
I hate
Sox
that.
Too. Yeah.
Red Cow.
Red Cow.
I think it'll be like a Dennis Hauger or a Felipe Drugovich, if those people are in the Red Bull Driver Academy, which I hope they are. My F2 knowledge is not what it should be.
The mine's not either. At all.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I can see. You know, that makes sense. And then Ricciardo to Haas, Gasly to Alpine, Schumacher to Williams. And then, I think then we're all done. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, it makes sense to me as well. So Ricciardo to Haas, let's talk about that real quick. Really might be the only seat for him as well. I mean, you've got these drivers where they kind of only have one option if they want to drive for next year. And I guess it just depends on where these other drivers go. I wonder who the linchpin is for this in terms of the first driver to fall into a seat that determines the moves for everything else. I feel like once one of these drivers gets into a cockpit, that's kind of gonna cement everything else, all these other moves, like a Rubik's cube, you know. Ricciardo to Haas, that would actually be a pretty kick-ass 1-2 with Magnussen and Daniel Ricciardo next to each other. And assuming Haas can make some sort of upgrade from last year and capitalize on a year of having this car and these new regulations and the data they've gathered from that and converting that into upgraded performance next year, that would be pretty interesting. And I think that would actually give them a pretty real shot at, say, like a P5 constructors next year. And maybe even some podiums, man, depending on...
Great.
I saw, too, some chatter about a new title sponsor for them as well, which would be incredible for that team. I think they've needed that for a while, especially with, the Uralkali debacle and things like that. It's either that or Gene Haas throws in more money, which we all know he doesn't like doing. So it'd be cool. Nutella Haas.
Hell yeah. Or I wonder how desperate they are. If they got Playboy Haas.
Playboy Haas, dude.
That's cool, man. That's so cool. I'd watch Playboy Haas.
Meta Haas,
Or just go really corrupt Skynet Haas.
Skynet Haas. Keanu Reeves Haas.
Oh, I'd watch that.
John Wick Haas,
Just the worst film franchise ever.
Yeah.
Jack and Jill starring Adam Sandler Haas.
Oddly interesting, oddly intriguing. Yeah, let's see if they pull in a title sponsor. We'll keep an eye on that. Put a pin in that for right now, because I think if we see a Ricciardo Magnussen 1-2, we see some injection of fresh cash next year. We see a Haas program that is able to offer more than one upgrade throughout a season, because that is massively disappointing for a car that was that has so much promise this year. Then we'll be seeing some pretty exciting things in Guntherland, which who doesn't love that guy,
Yeah, of course.
Who doesn't love him?
I think one little asterisk with the Ricciardo move is I'm pretty sure he's one of the most paid drivers on the grid. He gets a bumper contract, and Magnussen, I know if you drive for Haas, sort of the caveat is you don't get a lot of money for an F1 driver. And I just can't see Haas affording that multi-million pound contract. You know, as much as they might want him, if he's going to cost you 15 million and Felipe Drugovich might cost you one.
Yeah.
Their hands might be tied. K-Mag is a good enough driver to lead the team. you know, he only needs someone half competent next to him. Yeah. And the team will do well.
Also, don't count out a practical, more conservative move of a, say, a Robert Schwartzman in a Haas seat as well. That is a young driver in their academy, currently a reserve driver for Ferrari. I don't know if you can convince me that he would pass up on an opportunity to get a permanent drive next season. I think he deserves it. I've wanted to see more of Schwartzman in general. I think that kid is a really untapped talent. All the spotlights and the talk have been about Piastri this season and what he's doing. But I think Schwartzman is sort of that underrated talent that hasn't been talked about a lot, but I think he has some things to offer. So yeah, I mean, I don't, if it's not Ricciardo, I think Ricciardo too could take a pay cut, you know, if he wants to stay in. If he wants to stay in bad enough, take a pay cut. It's not like he's earned that $15 million contract the last couple of years.
No.
You know, like, I don't know if his market value is sustained through the last couple of seasons. So let's move on real quick to Circuit de Spa-Francorchamps. It's confirmed for next season. I have doubts that it will actually go on past next season. I want it to. We were talking about this off the air, that you actually think Formula One would be better off without it. You think they would actually benefit without having Spa. I actually, that's a hot take I had earlier this season when I actually kind of flipped on that. And I don't know, man. I like the track. Think it's a staple, just like Monaco. I would like to see the sport retain a little bit more tradition and not just go the way of, you know, everything for money. Although I am aware of what planet we live on. So I don't know, man. You don't think this is going to be a thing that lasts for very much longer?
I think I tweeted this out on our account. I wish I could take Eau Rouge and put it somewhere else. Because Eau Rouge is probably the best corner in F1. You know,
yeah.
That first practice on a Friday, watching the first car fly up, is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But I feel like you take that out and really you're left with a circuit that's half of it is just a straight and then half of it is a twisty section that you can't pass on. You know, it's partly unfortunate with DRS that has ruined Spa a little bit, but everything, you're not going to pass into the source because you get re-overtaken. So you get close through Blanchimont up to the bus stop, you follow down the pit straight, and then you easily pass as you come up to the comp. And that is every overtake, and then you're gone. You know, there's no side-by-side potential really at all. There's no dueling potential. Tire strategy is normally quite boring. And it's such a shame. It's such a shame because there's so much character in that circuit. But I think the cars are too wide and DRS is too powerful for great racing. I totally get the argument about historicity and F1, you know, protecting your Monzas and protecting your Silverstones. And look, you need tracks like that. But I think you either, the old circuits either fall into one or two categories. They're either unbelievably iconic, cannot be replaced, like Monaco, or the racing is actually still really good, like Silverstone.
Right.
And I don't think Spa is that iconic. And I don't think it is that good at racing to keep either. You know, compare it to like the Nürburgring. The Nürburgring's such a better track when it comes to racing. And that's not far off almost as iconic as that's gone. So I feel like if we can justify that going.
Right.
If you replace it with like a Bahrain or a Baku, or, you know, there's plenty of tracks with no historical cult to them at all. You know, Baku is literally just some right angles in the world somewhere. And it's one of the best tracks on the grid.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I asked you, do you want to replace that with, I don't know, Donington? And you say no. You know, just because it's historical doesn't make it great to watch. That was a long rant. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
I like Spa. I'd miss it, but
I would miss it too. You know, that is a good point, that it, just because it's historical doesn't mean it is good for racing now in 2022. I completely understand that. I guess what I'm really expressing in my reluctance to let go of a track that is just the detachment from the history of the sport. I really is a lot of that. That's the historicity, as you said, which another great word. Going to start using that just in general.
I'm taking a punt that that's a real word. Yeah. So use that at your peril at your next dinner party.
Yeah,
and I'm not taking any responsibility if it's wrong.
I will blame you. I will actually FaceTime you immediately and blame you if it goes well.
Thank you.
But here's the thing is, if Spa leaves, will I be completely devastated? Probably not. But my main fear is that we keep bleeding races from the European theater and we just slowly start losing races from the place where the sport was born. And I don't know if that's the greatest sustainable strategy for this sport. I think if you lose Spa, okay, fair enough. There's some points there. You know, let's maybe replace it with another European race, even something in Asia, maybe just a track that, you know, we haven't used, but that can come back. I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. I just am afraid of losing too many European races. And you know what? As someone obsessed with the sport who lives in the United States, I love the fact that we've got, as far as next year goes, we've got three races in the States. That's going to be rad. You know, what are we going to do? Start adding more American races? I mean, where are we going to go back to? I think just the question is what replaces it on the calendar. And it's an interesting question. I just don't want it to turn into this homogenous thing, of nothing but street courses. Like we're in some sort of video game.
No, you are right.
Like, oh, let's do a street course in Paris and stuff like that. It's like, oh, man. I mean, can we just use actual circuits? You know, not that Tilkadromes are the greatest thing of all time, but it just, you hate to see anything commodified too much and then eventually homogenized because of that. Because a lot of corporate interests have gotten their hands on it and they kind of just turn it into this money funnel. Tradition does matter in a sense. And the human meaning of things matters and how that's significant and connected to the history. I just am somebody that's going to stand up for that whenever I can. Things connected to their past and knowing where they come from is important for the future of anything. And once you are detached from where you came from, then you kind of just lose your way. I think that's true of a lot of things. So I think that's the main concern is just, you know, becoming too detached and too libertyized with this thing.
I like that. I'm using that.
Libertized, I guess. And that's, you know, and that's sort of a thing with being an American and being in this ecosystem in this media landscape where you're kind of too aware of what American media organizations can do to things in the wrong way. Part of the reason I got into the sport is because it is so much just about the competition and about the purity of it. And you just hate to see it kind of ruined, especially selfishly, right when I start getting into it. It's just like it turns into this thing.
Yeah.
I find myself watching these races from 10, 15 years ago. And I was thinking the other day about how cool it would be to have a race now shot in the style of a race from like 2007 and the way and how that cool that would be. I was asking some people in my league Discord, is it even possible, say you had a bunch of badass camera equipment and broadcasting, webcasting equipment, could you even just go shoot if you had the means to do that, could you go to a race and just shoot it in your own style? And then broadcast it. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, oh, I don't even think you can because of licensing and stuff like that, which is obviously a bummer. But like, I don't know. It would just be cool to have an acknowledgement of what this sport really is. And especially if you're really into the video game, where it's just the video game has kind of fallen off in the last couple of years. And the new video game now is just like you're buying couches and like floor tiles and like you get it's making you drive supercars. And you're just like, what is this? Like, that's the worst part about everything right now is that need to like show off shit that you really can't afford. And that's like the epitome of it. It's just like, look at my fake supercar that I bought with actual money in this stupid video game. It's like, piss off with all that. You know, just what does this sport mean? Where does it come from? I matched your rant with an equally as insufferable rant. So, yeah.
No. The argument is traditional, I think, is a fair one in F1. And everything has its tradition. But I think what you have to remember is F1's been going for 72 years. And if you said in the 80s, I can't believe they're getting rid of Brands Hatch. I think, what on earth are they doing? Or I can't believe they're getting rid of Kyle Army. Eventually, you know, the vast majority of tracks still on the calendar were not in the calendar in 1950. And I don't think the sport is any worse for them. So then hypothetically, I guess for you, if you had to pick, because I think most people agree, refreshing the calendar every now and then is fun. But then what tracks would you permalist? Would you keep forever, never change them? Because the only ones I can think of in terms of classic ones, I wouldn't keep Imola. I think Imola's, I don't like Imola. I don't think it's a good track for modern F1. Mm. Monza, Monaco, Silverstone, Interlagos. And I think, unless I'm missing one, that's probably it. Because they are four tracks that do produce either good races or, in Monaco, a very unique challenge.
Yeah. I would keep that list and add Bahrain.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was only
see,
talking...
Yeah, I don't ever want to see Bahrain go away. Tracks. I think that's a great track. Yeah, I think that's probably it, those five. But that's a great point. I mean, Brands Hatch is definitely something that is... You can't race on that track now. It would be fun to see a Brands Hatch F1 race again, but I don't know if that would produce the greatest competitions. So,
no.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. We'll see. Obviously not going to be decided anytime soon.
Or by us,
which, I mean, unfortunately, man, if they put me in charge, yeah, dude.
Dirty.
Bringing back the sprinklers, baby. All right. So before we get out of here, hot take corner.
Hot take corner, baby.
Hot take corner. What is your hot take for this episode, for this week?
Okay, so F1 has a pandemic. We've got a ton of world championship level drivers in Hamilton, Verstappen, Leclerc, Alonso, still Norris, etc.
Mm.
We've got a couple of real stinkers stinking out the grid. Latifi, you know, Stroll. But F1's pandemic. We are in a pandemic of mid. We have so many drivers that are uninspiring and mid.
Mm.
Yuki Tsunoda, mid. Mick Schumacher, mid. Alex Albon, mid. I think, and I'd like the guy, but I think Esteban Ocon, mid. There's just so much, for the best sport in the world, so much like mediocrity. And I think F1 really needs a sort of zhuzh up. I saw a picture the other day of the year that Albon, Russell and Norris were your rookies.
Yeah.
And we haven't had an intake like that in so long. And I think we do need it. We need a real refresh to stop the grid from feeling a little bit stale.
Yeah.
And I think we're a victim of our own success, F1, that there's so much young talent that's going to be there for a long time. But I think we do need to clear away some of this, you know, okay drivers just to liven up the grid again.
Yeah. What is the solution to that?
No, I mean, you can't. The thing is, if Lawrence Stroll sold Aston Martin, then straight away you've got Latifi and Stroll out. If Mick Schumacher leaves this year, that's already three exciting young drivers straight back in.
Yeah.
So I think the grid automatically looks more exciting. My F2 knowledge is not great, but surely it's got to be someone, or like an IndyCar driver. How cool would it be to see Colton Herta or Pato O'Ward on the grid?
Yeah.
You know, just something a bit different rather than Verstappen, Leclerc, Hamilton, Norris.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think they could do a few things to clear up a lot of this mid. I have a counter to that, which is going to be my hot take. But yeah, I think they could probably do a few things to switch that up, you know, and maybe make things a little bit more spec. I wouldn't mind seeing the regulations go a little bit more spec in terms of how these teams are allowed to develop their cars and things like that. I think that might do
it. So, sorry, is this your hot take?
No, this isn't my hot take. I'm just kind capping on the end. My hot take to counter this is I believe that Alex Albon, when it is said and done, will be considered one of the great drivers of Formula One. I consider Alex Albon to be a really, really just underdeveloped talent. And I think he's got a lot of potential that hasn't been tapped into yet.
You think Alex Albon is going to be in the GOAT debate?
I haven't had a real scalding hot take yet, and I feel like it's time for me to come in with just a super searing hot take.
Okay. you can't just leave that like a fart in a room and then walk away. Yeah. You have to have a bit of justification there.
Yeah.
How is Alex Albon going to end up as one of the Formula One goats?
You know what? I don't even have a ton of justification. I just think when I watch him drive, I see a driver that just hasn't tapped into certain doors that he is going to be able to tap into within the next few years. I think, especially locking him into a contract with Williams, and this would be dependent on Williams taking some steps to improve their car in massive ways over the next few years before that new engine regulation takes over in 2026. But I think him and Williams are going to bring Williams back to the forefront of Formula One. Is this more of me wanting to see this happen? Yes. Is Alex Albon my favorite driver on the grid? Yeah, he is. I mean, he just...
Aww.
I get to ask this question all the time, is who's your favorite driver? And it's just Alex Albon, man. I think he was pulled up into Red Bull too soon, and I think that gave people a little bit of a bitter taste in their mouths that maybe wouldn't be lingering still if he wasn't shoved up into that spotlight a little too soon. I think he was a little overcooked, maybe even one season too soon. I think the balance there with the young talent is very volatile sometimes, and I think he was thrown up into that a little bit too quickly. And I think now that he's found a more comfortable home in Williams, and also now that he was able to detach that umbilical cord from the Red Bull ecosystem, I think we're going to see great things from him. He's still got, and the basis for saying he's got a lot of untapped potential is the fact that he's still got a lot of aggression to develop in his style. And I don't think that's something that you lose. I think you gain more of that if you're the right personality. I think he's got, once he learns to develop just a bit more bite to him, I think he's going to be just a talent that it will be hard to contend with. I think he came in a little soft, and I think he's only up. I just don't see him degrading anytime soon. I think he will break through that ceiling.
I think he'll be a funny quiz question in 20 years time. Who was the only Thai Formula One driver? Alex Albon. Oh yeah, remember that guy? Yeah. What, the they race me so hard guy?
I think he wins a race in the next couple of years.
That's crazy.
I think he's gonna do it, man.
I mean, even Williams are going to have the ability to win a race in the next couple of years. It's a crazy stat.
Call it a hunch, man. But I just got a hunch. I got a gut instinct, and my instincts are good usually. We'll see. James, thanks for joining me again for this episode. We got to get out of here. Zandvoort coming up in a couple of days. Really excited. Going to be watching that one from the road. I got some tour gigs this weekend. Got to miss my league race Thursday, man, at Zandvoort. I'm the first person in my division to reach 50 starts. Midwest Esports just got that stat yesterday, and I got a 5-star cushion, so I can miss a couple. But we got a championship race on the line, so I got to come back with Monza Strong next week. James, any parting words?
George Russell to take his first win at Zandvoort.
Ooh, talk about hot takes, man.
That upgrade package, baby, I'm telling you.
Well, I think Leclerc is going to come back and win this one.
Yeah, so I think if I was being serious, I think that's why I agree with you.
Ferrari's going to do fine. Zandvoort, big downforce. They're running a lot of downforce. They lose that straight line, but I think Ferrari's got it in the back for this next one, assuming they don't put them on the intermediates for whatever reason on the second
stint. Do not rule anything out with La Scuderia.
Yeah, man. Thanks again for joining me. And everybody, feel free to email us, armchairapex@gmail.com. Join us on Twitter at armchair_apex. And we will see you next time.